The prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this episode of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We're coming to you live from our radio and television studios located in beautiful northwest Pennsylvania, where it's a blustery, cold, snowing, and, oh yeah, it's just a mess out there. Folks, we broadcast live each and every weeknight. That's Monday through Fridays from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Global Star Radio Network. We're simulcast on Blog Talk Radio as well. You can watch us live and by archive. Tune us in on our YouTube channel, folks. Go to HagmanandHagman.com, and there you can access all venues right from our website. And don't forget, we've got two separate websites, folks. Now we're doing our best, and JD's done his best to get them user friendly. Okay, now, folks, we appreciate your comments about them. You know, we are working toward just a across the board very good way of navigation, and we've got two websites. We've got HagmanandHagman.com and we've got HagmanReport.com. Now, HagmanandHagman.com is the show website. HagmanReport.com is for all news information, things not related to the program. So just keep that in mind, okay? Bookmark both websites, and of course our YouTube channel. We have the latest show information and such, BTR, all of that together. And Global Star Radio Network, links to the Global Star Radio Network should you choose to listen to the show, obviously. And there you can download the show, the archive show, hour by hour if you'd like. It's really a neat setup. So we're trying to accommodate everyone, and I think we're doing a pretty good job. Anyway, I'm Doug Hagman at the helm with fellow investigator, researcher, and most importantly, my son, Joe Hagman. We are the Hagman and Hagman Report. I like to call America's premier father-son investigative reporting team. And, you know, we do dig deep into the topics of mainstream mass media, Illuminati-controlled mass media will never do, not from here on out. And many people adhere to the coincidence theory of historical and current geopolitical events. We look well beyond that and put together the conspiratorial aspect, awakening others to the truth and the real news behind the headlines. And this is something that, you know, we have to take a look from a high level, from cruising altitude. And that way it's much easier to connect the dots, and everything looks a lot more manageable in terms of the flow of information. I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in. I want to thank those who are tuning in that are new to the program. We get emails all the time, and thank you so much for all of those tuning in. We've broken well over a million archive listens, and just in a single venue, BTR alone this month. This week. Yeah. What am I saying? So thank you.
Thank you for reminding me. I've been opening the BTR chat on a regular basis now, and it's been sparsely populated, about 100 people at the most, around 60 on average, but I forgot to open it today, so thank you.
You can go ahead and do that. There's so much to get into. Before we do get into the nice program, just want to mention that portions of the nice broadcast brought to you by Casper. Now, folks, how many people out there are really having trouble, like going to sleep, falling asleep? They're uncomfortable. If you're uncomfortable in bed, well, we've got the answer for you. It's Casper Mattress. Casper, for those who don't know, and you're thinking of the friendly ghost, now Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for just a fraction of the price. You can visit their website. Check it out, casper.com/CFP radio. That's our little world on Casper's website. But portions of the nice broadcast brought to you by Casper.com/CFP radio. And I'll tell you something during the show. after the show, you can check it out. But more on this later, because there's a great offer there just for listeners of our broadcast. And again, that's casper.com/CFP radio. But a lot to get into. You know, Russia is warning of a new world war that's starting in Syria. And didn't we say early on, didn't we say months ago that the war, the world war will not start? No, it won't be Iran. It won't be. No, it's going to be in Syria. That's, we said that. And we're on record by saying that. Now Russia is warning of this new world war starting in Syria. This is going to be the epicenter of the war that's coming, the world war that's coming, that's going to restructure the entire power structure globally and usher in what is commonly referred to as the new world order.
This is a good place closer to start.
Yeah, let's go ahead.
Well, we have, you know, Assad gave an interview. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad admits Turkey and Saudi Arabia could soon send troops into the country, but remains confident that he can retake the war-torn nation. The statement comes as Radi has retired. It's reiterated its goal of ousting the leader from office. In Russia, the Prime Minister warned the U.S. and the Saudis against starting a preeminent war with a ground intervention in Syria. Those are two separate.
It's a done deal, though. Saudi, it's a done deal. The commitment is made. This is an invasion, and it's being looked at as an invasion, not just merely a support.
We talk about proxy wars so often. Saudi Arabia is one of the U.S.'s closest allies. With this administration, closer.
That says a lot.
And the last administration, it's closer ally than Israel was. With the Bush and the Obama presidency. For Saudi Arabia to send ground troops into Syria would be like Saudi Arabia having a problem with Canada and U.S. troops going in. Does that make sense?
Yeah. That's pretty much it. I mean, that's pretty much what we're looking at.
They will carry out the agenda of the American globalist, not of the people of the Middle East. Not of the Sunni or Shia, it's not of the Syrians or the Saudi Arabians, but the globalist elites who control the banking, political, and military complex that runs the world.
Well, as it's being presented here, Russia said, look, folks, and made this statement both to the United States, or to the United States as well as the world, saying a new world war will start in Syria, and the impetus behind this is the influx of troops and of support by the Saudis and other Gulf states, the coalition of Gulf states, which is being led by Saudi Arabia. Now, they've staged their own intervention in Syria, saying that they were committed to sending ground troops into the country. They favored rebel groups, or their favored rebel groups have been just absolutely decimated by Russian air raids, and they've been driven back on the ground, and they've been by Iranian supplied pro-regime groups. Now, you've got this interesting but very complex bedfellows here, geopolitical bedfellows. Iran helping Syria, Russia helping Syria and Iran, and you got Saudi Arabia and other minor players going in.
What they're saying here is that a U.S.-led coalition will agree to move. On Friday, Saudi Arabia's foreign minister said that Saudi Arabia's goal was to remove Assad, confidently stating, "We will achieve it," just like Obama stated they would do at the start of this civil war started by the United States. This, you know, they could say the Arab Spring was started by a man lighting himself on fire in a spontaneous uprising in Tunisia.
Spontaneous, yeah.
That might have been the case, but all the things that occurred after that were not spontaneous.
Well, the event of that self-immolation by the guy is one thing, but the planning, the events, the long range events were something totally different. So they were planned long time in advance. Now, here's what you have, and we need to really understand this because we're watching. We're really watching the road to World War III, but we're long past that. We've actually exited the interstate, and we're now on the road that leads directly into, I mean, the next red light is going to really be comprised of a flashpoint that's going to usher in this war. Now, the rebels, the United States and Russia both are saying, look, ceasefire. We have to have a ceasefire, but on our terms. And NATO, here's one scenario which I'm going to toss out there. You have Russia that will, and I was talking to Steve Quayle this morning about this. We were both kind of trying to put together this idea of what could possibly happen. Well, think about this. Think about Russia attacking or because of the provocations through Turkey and the allies there, NATO allies. Imagine if Turkey would get struck, or one of the bases that would include NATO get hit by Russia. Well, what would be the response? And of course, you've got the Saudis here. And Russia, I suspect, will take out Saudi Arabia completely, their power, command, and control structures, much like the United States did to Iraq, except using air power only. I believe the country is Saudi Arabia. So I think in the crosshairs of Russia is Saudi Arabia. The United Nations Security Council, through their resolutions, they're not helping anything whatsoever. That's a mess. But in the end, I think that the consolidation of power here, the players are being set up for this particular war. And better keep an eye on not just Saudi Arabia, but the UAE and other such supportive states of the Saudi-led coalition. So, because the Saudis are leading the Islamic military coalition, and the Saudis are being backed by the United States, which is interesting because you've got timing. Valerie Jarrett in there in the White House. Yeah, it's all
the timing. And you can scratch our back, we can scratch your back, kind of deal.
Yep.
Obama looks good as oil prices are low, bringing affordable energy back into the United States, where people can fill up their tanks and still have money for a gallon of milk and whatnot, or they couldn't when Bush left office, or while he was in office when it was back up to $5 a gallon. But there are wars or conflicts on many fronts. You have what we're talking about now, the military conflict, which is a international in scope, yet at the same time it is domestic in each and every area of the country.
Yep.
The domestic wars we're fighting is against the police state, the federalization, the militarization of the tyrannical government encroaching each and every day on our rights, our freedoms, and wanting to modify behaviors after already, the war on food and air and pollution and health that we've been fighting. We have currency conflicts going on. China's currency, they say, will diminish the dollar's role in international trade in a matter of a very short time. This is an article from yesterday that is written by Ali Mayer from the Free Beacon. Report, China's currency will diminish dollar's role in international trade. Renminbi, now fifth most important payment currency in the world. Now, remember, it was just put on the World Reserve Currency Status List on the IMF a few months back. And I believe there's seven currencies there. So it's up to number five already. And we see the dollar, it has, about 2% left to go before all value is lost. Because in 1913, if you take the value of a dollar, it's lost 98% of its value since then.
Right.
So not too much further to go there. But they say China has to take a few steps to internationalize the renminbi, and they're gaining traction in the currency war, representing the fifth most popular payment. They say that the Chinese renminbi is barely visible in international trade of financial flows just 3 years ago, but it appears to be blossoming now. China is now the world's largest trading nation, and more corporations, particularly in Asia, were beginning to invoice their business in renminbi currency.
Mm-hmm.
And these developments, they say, is in tandem with measures taken by China to develop its own payment system that could diminish the primacy of U.S. financial institutions. It would affect the ability of the U.S. to continue wielding the financial clout that it has currently had as a result of the dollar dominance in international finance.
Yep. That's, we're seeing so many things happen on the Really, we're seeing so many things happen on the with the economy. Now, Deutsche Bank is in death spiral at the moment. You can see this kind of going downhill real quick. So following, well, look at Deutsche Bank. Look at what's taking place there, and of course, all of the alternative media pundits, financial pundits, are saying this would be akin to 2008 or Lehman Brothers on steroids. Well, all right. So what's going to happen there when Deutsche Bank goes down? What's going to happen in the European Union? The collateral damage from the Deutsche Bank, when you've got this in tandem with what Joe's talking about, well, we've got this. Ultimately, it's going to lead to currency wars. It's going to lead to, well, it's already led to currency wars, but ultimately, it's going to lead to this massive. I don't want to use the wrong word. I guess I would just say financial Armageddon, and that's
at least for Americans or in the Western world.
But that always follows. Before a shooting war, there's, generally speaking, some sort of massive mass casualty economic event. Could Deutsche Bank be that particular one? Perhaps. I think maybe that we're talking that would be the impetus, or could be one of the impetus for war. And many financial websites are talking about this, about Deutsche Bank in particular, about the you really can't. I'm not sure, you folks. I'm not sure you can actually talk about Deutsche Bank and the economic problems solely without looking at the entire complex world system of world economy, because all of everything is pretty much wired into everything else.
yeah.
You know, so
the global smart grid, as it could be termed.
Experts, a lot of financial experts, are warning that a current crisis in here this month is the prelude to chaos and the unwinding of Western civilization. That's pretty dire and dramatic headlines.
Yeah.
But you know, when you look at what's taking place, how can they possibly keep this together? There's not enough duct tape and string to really keep this together. So, combined with the low oil prices, which is actually a proxy attack against Russia's economy, Russia's not going to be putting up with this. So, all of this to say, with the warnings of world war starting in Syria by Russia, well, and that's responding too to the low oil prices. That's really screwing up with our economy.
We say, you know, world war in Syria, that is yet to come. But what has been happening there since 2011 is massacres, civil war, the United States intervening through the facilitating money and weapons to the rebel groups that have become known as ISIS, that are trying to overthrow Assad. There was a domino effect, just like it is in the end of Daniel, that Egypt and Libya would be overthrown. Well, they were, along with their leaders.
Yeah.
Dictators implemented by the United States, who kept the peace between religious factions in that very tightly wound religious area. Well, as it looks now, you know, there was a time where Saddam Hussein, Muammar Gaddafi, they all kept peace. Assad, they did not allow Muslims to kill Christians or vice versa. They kept stability and peace, not only
among the religious groups,
but they kept them among the nations around each other. And we had, at the same time, been shaking Gaddafi's hand, inviting him to the White House, you know, and the other hand, you know, picking the straws to see which one was going to put the knife in his back. There is so much more involvement in here than with the U.S., and not specifically the government. When we say the government, we're not talking about the whole United States government. The U.S. government is made up of a number of agencies that are made up of a number of human beings. Most of them are good people, I'm sure. But there are those people who know how to compartmentalize and use humans to fulfill an agenda, sometimes without the knowledge of those humans. that have set up with the spiritual powers, which is another conflict, the main conflict that we have on this earth, which is the oldest conflict. Before there was murder on this earth, there was a spiritual battle. And, you know, these puppeteers controlling the people on the ground level know exactly what they're doing. They have the power of Satan and his knowledge, and he is the prince of the power of the air and this earth. He is the one that says in the Bible that he will persecute the saints and overcome them in the end, but will be thrown in everlasting fire when everything's all said and done. But we're told that, you know, he comes to this earth and his wrath is great because his time is short. And don't think it's going to be surprising. It's not going to be surprising when we see what we see now on Twitter. This is a story from yesterday. I'll just hit the headline. Twitter is now characterizing criticism of Islam as hate speech. And along with that headline, Steve Quill had a headline on his site that caught my attention, really caught my attention. Christian conservatives pivotal in the South and feeling under siege. The headline was, you know, Christians, persecution or intensity of Christian persecution is rising in the South. And this is from Roberta, Georgia. And they say that inside a Sunshine Coin Laundry near the Piggly Wiggly supermarket, a Miss Ellington removed her family's clothes from one of the large dryers and began to fold them at a nearby table. It goes on to say that she was folding her clothes and talking with somebody about their views from the presidential race to different candidates to their spiritual paths in life. And Miss Ellington, who's doing her laundry, says, "I'm going to pray on it. Hopefully God will lead me in the right direction." And it goes on to say that, there was an altercation that happened, and this is continuing to increase. Biblical values are something that Christians are not willing to compromise, yet they are being completely decimated in the Bible Belt areas of the state. We see, I don't know, Dad, if you saw this, the Satanist behind Sanders. This was on Alex Jones' site, InfoWars. Rally behind socialist Bernie Sanders.
Yep, and folks, pay attention to this.
Bernie Sanders even said, hey, it says Bernie Sanders is pretty popular among Satanists.
He is.
Socialist Bernie Sanders' campaign has evidently roused the satanic electorate. In a highly popular pro-Sanders MAME group created on Facebook, a post with an image stating Sanders or Satanist for Bernie 2016 has received over 1,100 likes and 200 shares. It has a pentagram of the Baphomet symbol underneath the slogan, or above the slogan, Satanist for Bernie 2016. Several members of the Bernie Sanders cautioned the image looks bad for the campaign and asked it to be removed, but many others embraced and supported the endorsement. And they give comments here from different people in the social media. And, you know, Bernie's very popular. Here's one comment. Bernie is a very popular among Satanists. The solid majority of the people I know in the satanic community plan on voting for him. It goes on to state in the article, while the image's creator is unknown, it is discussed in the comments that the Church of Satan, a central hub of satanic worship, has not endorsed any presidential candidate. Another group entitled the Satanic Communist Party, boasting over 2,000 members, also appears to lean pro-Bernie. The Satanic Communist Party. Does there need to be a distinction there? While supporters attempt to distance Sanders' brand of socialism from communism, revolutionaries instrumental in shaping the ideology, particularly Vladimir Lenin, have openly admitted the goal of socialism is communism. In his book entitled Marx and Satan, author Richard Wurmbrand, who was imprisoned for 14 years by the communist government of Romania for espousing Christian beliefs, demonstrates through direct quotes that the man credited as the father of communism crafted the ideology inspiration from the powers of darkness with the intent to destroy religion. And it goes on from there.
Folks, we're already at the bottom of the first hour. I believe it's time I want to just tell you exactly what
you made me think it was already the end of that.
No. This is the bottom of the first hour. And we're going to be taking, as the program unfolds here, what we'd like to do is I'd like to get your take, folks, on what you think is, well, anything that's on your mind tonight. We're going to open the phone lines at the top of the next hour. That would be hour number two. And we want to get your take on current events, whether it be domestic or the larger geopolitical. If you want to comment on the show, if you want to have a if you have a suggestion or whatever, it's your time. It's your night tonight. So we're going to open the phone lines. Give us a call. Get in line. Beginning at about 5 minutes to eight, the phone lines will be
after we come back from the break.
Or after, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah,
we'll do that.
Yeah. So we'll have the for those watching on YouTube, we'll put up the number and go from there. But one thing too, and I apologize for seeming a little bit disjointed here. One, we are getting information, and I don't know how many people have heard about this attack in Columbus, Ohio. I've been getting information from somebody there in Columbus.
When you say attack.
Okay. In Columbus, yesterday, a Muslim man armed with a machete was shot and killed by police after attacking restaurant patrons. Okay.
This happened recently.
This happened yesterday.
Too.
Yeah. But the information we're getting from an individual on the ground in Columbus, I was trying to actually get him on the program, but the information we're getting is this is a much bigger problem with the Somali Muslim population in and around Columbus, Ohio. That said, there was a Somali Muslim, excuse me, by a guy by the name of, I'm sorry. Yeah, I lost my place here. A guy by the name of Muhammad. There, I just lost my place again. Well, that's all you need to know, right? A guy by the name of Muhammad. Muhammad Berry went into a restaurant, a Jewish-owned restaurant, yesterday. Okay, and he, and this, by the way, the attack occurred at Nazareth Restaurant and Deli. It's a Mediterranean eatery. It's Jewish-owned. But the unidentified man at the time walked into the restaurant, had a conversation with one of the employees there, exited the restaurant. About a half hour later, the suspected attacker returned. He approached a man and a woman at a table near the doorway and just began his rampage. He had a machete, took it out, and started to strike the patrons. He came in and started beating up on another guy. And at first, the people there inside the restaurant thought it was just kind of a domestic or a personal issue. But then he started right down the row hitting everyone with his machete. People were bleeding. And the Jewish Christian owner of the restaurant, Haney Baranci, now he's been in the United States for over 30 years. He was previously an Israeli citizen. The restaurant itself, the establishment there, is known for its diverse patronage. Now, the owner, Jewish owner, was not at the store at the time or the restaurant at the time. Muhammad Berry went in and asked where he was from, and then after finding out he was from Israel, he left and came back. I'm not sure if any of the mainstream media is reporting on this. I know they're reporting on the event, but they're calling it an attack, not a terrorist attack, not a religiously motivated attack, but they're just an attack. But how many machete attacks really have we seen? Or how many machete attacks, how many have we seen since 9/11? How many machete attacks have we seen since this influx of Islamic,
you know, I don't know people. Since the influx, but in Europe, that's been a constant,
that's right.
Point of interest. You know, there was a very famous case not too long ago of a Muslim man beheading a police officer in the UK, right in the street. And there was also, as I said, an incident in New York where there was a machete wielding man running around chopping people up, not killing them, but, you know, as they put their arms up in defense, doing some pretty terrible damage, as you could imagine. And what you're getting at, you know, will there be more of these? will this continue?
I guarantee you there'll
with
be more
the
of these.
Riot, yes, it will.
And now this guy, I should finish the my notes here, or finish the story, because this guy did successfully leave the restaurant. Now, if this isn't a call to everyone with a concealed weapons permit to certainly carry weapons, then I don't know what is, because anyone there, not thankfully,
or take up throwing stars.
Yeah. Wow, that's interesting. Now, no one died as a result of the attack. One person is in critical condition. Four others are in the hospital. But the police, the guy did manage to leave the restaurant. Some of the patrons and witnesses identified the car. Police did track him down, and they stopped him. And the guy got out, and it was kind of a suicide by cop at that point. The man was Muhammad Berry was killed at the end. But you know, you've got right now up to 34 million blank green cards, work permits that were ordered ahead of Obama's illegal amnesty, immigrant amnesty program. This back, just go back a year and a half to October 2014, and you can see where we are being set up here. Okay, we are being set up by this massive alien influx and invasion. And you can see that from the statistics you've got of the alien invasion into the United States, that this is not a humanitarian issue as much as it is a Trojan horse issue, because 75% of the people coming into this country in that group of Muslims, or in that group of refugees, 75% are Muslim men, and a high percentage, roughly 87 to 90%, based on the latest figures, are Muslim men of between 18 and 40. I don't have the file in front of me, but 49, I think, or 50. So they're all within this fighting age. 12% are women, and only 13% are children, to be precise. So the question that we have to ask is, are the men who are coming into this country, what are they? Are they without families? What are they doing coming into this country? Did they abandon their women and children back home, or are they just without families? What's the deal with respect to the men? That's a high percentage, and certainly out of way far out of any type of logical statistical. I mean, I would consider a statistical anomaly that can't be. It's not by accident, it's by design. So anyway, and just to be clear, the Justice Department is refusing to call this a terrorist attack. They're denying and minimizing any terrorist ties that this guy has. They're saying it's just a random
related
attack.
Neighborhood related,
just a random attack, and they're not even calling it a biased attack. No, they're saying it's
a butter knife.
But, yeah, but there's, I mean, it's not even a religious or a hate crime. Basically,
he's
the
victim.
You know, so they're going so far away from this. But you're right. When you take the machete attack that happened in New York City a while back, and you start looking around, you're seeing that we are not safe anywhere. So I would definitely say that if you are licensed to carry a firearm, at this point, I would recommend anyone who is licensed to carry a firearm to carry it wherever you go, restaurants included. And you know what? Here's my point. Here's my view. If I go up to a restaurant and I'm going to eat there, and they don't allow weapons, I don't patronize the place. End of story. I'm not going to make myself a sitting duck inside a restaurant or any place.
Really?
That's just me. Yeah, absolutely not. I will not go into any place where I cannot carry a gun.
I can't
refuse
signs, so
to go
I
in.
Just don't know.
Well, you know, that's. I guess you're gonna
I'm
have
always
to...
just unsure, so I err on the side of caution and remain safe.
Well, you know, I just refuse to do that. So, I would definitely recommend anyone who's got a concealed carry permit to.
I mean, I know you. I know you. Like, you know me. You would never preemptively start, pick a fight, or even try to continue an argument into it. I mean. Really, you know yourself, like I know you.
You think you do.
Do you feel safe to carry guns where they say you shouldn't? Are you going to accidentally pull a gun out and shoot somebody?
Well, no. I mean, I don't believe in accidental discharges. I mean
even if there was somebody came up to you and spit in your face and called your mom fat.
No, of course not.
No. No.
And
that's where we need to use discernment, because listening to, you know, the shelter in place and, you know, gun-free zones, this is where people die, and this is how they die and get in trouble. Well, not saying you should break the law. I'm just saying use discernment.
Use your own discernment. Don't forget, folks, we're going to be opening the lines after the top of the next hour, so weigh in with your thoughts and your, we know what's important to you. But folks, expect more of these machete attacks. The FBI, and thank you, Beth Ann R., from Louisiana, writes in, the FBI is investigating this. I guess they are. So thank you so much.
No, this is true. He came to each table, just started hitting them. One of the diners, Karen Bass, said to CBS News, there was a man on the floor bleeding, and there was blood on the floor. It was awful. It was carnage.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, all right. But we're going to be seeing a rise, and I believe this to be true, we're going to be seeing a rise in domestic violence here, domestic incidents involving terrorist attacks or attacks against specifically two types, or really three types. We're going to be seeing a rise based on everything I've researched and investigated. We're going to be seeing an immediate rise, a drastic rise in religious bias, hate crimes. Okay, that's number one. And I'm talking about violence.
In America?
In America here, yes.
Okay.
And it's going to increase against along the ideological lines, specifically Muslims versus Christians and Jews. That's
number
one.
Are we going to have Protestants versus Catholics?
No, not going to have that.
Just wondering.
Well, you know what? Perhaps, because
no, there's
we're
enough
at the end of
that,
times, right?
I mean, with the tongue being the sword, there's been more of that than any other type of
But the other two, we're going to see the black on white, white on black, the racial upset. That's going to be a close second. So you're going to see the largely religious and motivated attacks, specifically by Muslims against Jews and Christians. And the second type is going to be the racial divide. And thirdly, you're going to see something I don't think we've seen before, but because with the economy, and I think this needs to be mentioned, with the economy the way it is, and with the banks potentially in trouble, you're going to see more people lash out. It's going to be between the haves and the have-nots. And I dislike saying that. I dislike characterizing it in that fashion. But the people who believe that they have a right to other people's money, or the people who believe that they've been wronged by the 1%.
Right.
So you're going to, however you want to characterize that, but that's going to be happening more.
And we saw that with Occupy Wall Street.
Very much. Yep.
And I see articles hinting to that, you know, stating how the benefits for the elderly, like Social Security, retirement, things that they actually paid into and earn, are such a drag on the economy and sucking the, you know, the wealth from the youth. And it's not said like we're gonna, you know, line these people up and put them in death panels and get rid of them, but it is said in the way that they are letting people know that this seems to be a problem. You know, the way that how much these old people get in which barely allows them to pay rent and have groceries and enough money for medicine, these people look at as undeserving of these people to have it, these older people to have it, even though it's the money that they actually pay. It's like telling somebody they're not entitled to their savings account because, you know, they're poor. It's sad to see, and that is jealousy, it's envy, it is part entitlement. You know, there's a generation of people that I don't understand the mentality, because I was never taught this way, that you are going to be given a free lunch, or there's something owed to you, or you have handouts coming. I was taught you have to earn everything you get, and not only that, what you earn you have to take care of properly and responsibly. Advice I wish I would have followed a lot more than I have, but there, for some reason, whether it's coming from the education system or whatever, the programming and conditioning from the music to TV shows, people in the younger generations feel entitled to free stuff, free money, free everything. And they don't think of it as something that is worth money. They think of it as something that should be freely given. They think that a job should not be earned, that it should be given. And then when you have the job, you should not have to work for your salary. Just showing up is enough. They just go on and on about, you know, being basically the 99% where the 1% have all the wealth. Well, it's true that, you know, 80 families own 50% of the world's wealth. That is true. Yeah. And but that's about the problem. It has nothing to do with the people who make $100,000, $200,000, even $1 million a year.
Well, and you're right. It's there's that perception, and then there's the sense of entitlement, and to some extent, it's a genuine there's some rationale behind it. There's some
well, you know, if I was brought up my whole life with you telling me that our neighbor, the neighbor that has the beautiful gold statue in their front yard that, you know, that was really yours and the neighbor stole it. And
right.
Without telling the truth of the matter, you know, I can see how a person can get into
conditioning and programming, as you had said. And that's what we're really at the tail end here. Or not, I shouldn't say the tail end. We're really at the full throttle part of the conditioning and programming.
We got some good news. Well, yep. Semi-good news from Larry. Larry M., our Baltic Dry Index expert.
This is good news.
Up 1 point.
Up 1 point. All right. Thank you.
Hey, it's not down.
Well, yeah, how low can it go? Kind of like, you know.
Up 1 point to 291.
Well, there you go.
Thanks, Larry, for making my weekend.
Our resident Baltic Dry Index man, Larry from Santa Clarita, California. All right.
Yeah, we got a number of stuff to get into. Yeah. I don't want to know where you want to go from
well,
here.
Well, I want to mention this because it's, I think this is, to understand the culture of death that we are facing in this country and to understand the culture of death that is taking place. I'm going to just mention this event and then I'm going to explain why it's really super important to, in my belief. ISIS uses a 4-year-old British boy nicknamed Jihadi Jr. as this brutal executioner in this video. And you can find it online. We're not going to even address it, but ISIS terrorists have issued this video that shows this 4-year-old boy, it's a British boy, nicknamed Jihadi Jr., blowing up prisoners, okay? The video shows this little boy named Isaac Dare pushing a button on a remote control device seconds before a car explodes into a ball of flames. It's the second time that this boy has been used in these brutal propaganda videos by ISIS or by these Muslim terrorists. He's pictured wearing a black headband and military-style fatigues.
He's not killed, though?
No. He announces to the camera beforehand that we are going to kill all of the non-believers, all of the kuffars over there. Now, the Mirror Online had a story on this. The New York Daily News picked it up. And this is all kind of just surface candy. This is all icing. This is all just at the periphery. And I'm going to get into the depth of the importance of this here in just momentarily. But when you look at the video, the tags on the video and as well as the subtitles and the description, it was said to have been filmed in Syria. And then this masked man threatens David Cameron, the British Prime Minister, and accusing him of sending the so-called spies into into ISIS in Syria. And this guy says, well, today we're going to kill your spies the same way they help you kill our brothers. So prepare your army, gather your nations, as we too are preparing our army. Now, last month, this little boy's family said that they were devastated that he was being used in these grisly videos, okay? In other words, hey, where's my 4-year-old? You know, it's 8 o'clock in the morning. You know where your child is, right? They are pure evil for doing this to that little child. Pure evil. I burst into tears when I saw it was him. Now, this, according to an immediate family member of this young boy. All right, so why is this even important? Or, you know, why is this one boy, this one film, this one event, this one issue so important? Because we know ISIS uses these young people. Why? Well, okay, here's...
They use any and everybody that they can, innocent women, Christians.
Right. Well, and once more, I look at this and I see a whole lot of websites out there blaming Muslims, and I totally understand this. if you look back to what we had talked about all throughout the last, well, even a month ago or since the first of the year, we had talked about the programming of these of young people. We had talked about the mind control. We had talked about Islam being weaponized. Mm-hmm. Okay, now websites will go out and will properly identify, and even Muslim experts like Bill Warner we had on, again, properly identify Muslims.
So you can say, how can Islam be weaponized the same way prosperity preaching can be?
Well, yes, and that's not too far off in my view, an analogy. But here's what I believe is important. We are led to believe that Islam is, and I agree with this. Islam is a religion, is a religion that's violent, based on violence, based on the Quran and such. But where people stop and where everyone kind of loses the ball before crossing the goal line is who is actually controlling the programming? Who's actually weaponizing these children? Who's actually behind this, the people training the 4-year-old British boy? What's the impetus here? Well, you've got two things at play. You've got the United States and our coalition partners, and I use that term or that phrase broadly to describe NATO and any Western country that's involved in, upsetting the leadership and bombing villages and whatever, but primarily the U.S., Israel, and all countries that are involved in the campaign of destruction against, or campaign of toppling leadership all throughout the world, whether it be in South America, Central America, Middle East. So we've done this for so long that there's with impunity, and even worse, without the consent of the American people or the people in the West. So fine, bang, we do this. So by virtue of those actions, we are creating orphans. We are creating just this immense catastrophic scenario. In Syria, you can see it in Syria, where 50,000 in Aleppo alone are basically without homes today, in Syria, where Russia's saying, hey, you know, you guys came in here, you blew up things, now we're going to be picking up the pieces. So you've got that component. But the other side of the equation is you've got the Nazi mentality. Remember, during World War II, running up to World War II, you had the National Socialists, the Nazi Party, Himmler especially, saying, well, Christianity, we can't really do much to weaponize Christianity because of in Himmler's statement, it lacks the necessary manliness. Okay, I'm paraphrasing from Himmler. However, we can take Islam and weaponize Islam, and to use them to fight against all non-Muslim people, and that they became multiple brigades of Islamic fighters during World War II wearing Nazi uniforms and SS uniforms. All right, not too many people know that. So the same thing is happening today, or an extension of that is happening today. So you've got this Nazi mindset, this Nazi ideology that's driving this programming of these ISIS, of these terrorists. So you've got the cause and the effect. You've got the cause of the bombing and the effect being the response from these people. Not to say that's a legitimate excuse, but in their eyes it is. And then you got the programming, which is really an extension of the Nazi ideology, which has never left the American psyche or in the American political system. So those are two reasons. Meanwhile, you've got the New York Daily News and other publications and websites, even to the extent of some conservative websites and progressive, and especially liberal websites. I got taken to the woodshed about my video by somebody who's a conservative, runs a conservative website, saying, hey, you know, why are you picking on the conservatives with respect to the Burns, Oregon assessment? Well, because we already know the progressives and liberals and Marxists are not going to talk right about this. So
because conservatives, conservatives, conservative,
Yeah, go on.
Okay, conservatives. The reason is because you cannot, with one breath, say how sick you are of the labeling of being a domestic terrorist for loving the Constitution and the American flag, yet root for the government to annihilate people who believe the same.
Right.
That's
right.
Why.
Exactly. And people mistook, you know,
my words. Like the politicians, hypocrites.
Well, right. I mean, we know what to expect from the progressives. We know what to expect from the Marxists. We know that Bernie Sanders is not going to come out in favor of capitalism. So you don't even preach to him, or don't even talk to him about capitalism or the virtues of capitalism or whatever it might be. We know where he stands. We know where the progressives stand. So why should I even bother talking to them? I would have no audience. So talk to the conservatives. That's why. And so it's the same way here. To a large extent, we're looking at the programming where people understand the threat by the Muslims, especially in this country, but they're not taking the ball past the goal line. They're not seeing the entire complete picture, and that's my problem I have. Yes, we have a problem with Islamic violence, but what's behind that in the larger view? Well, it's this Nazi ideology that never died. And this is why it's so important, even at this late hour, to go back and to talk about the Nazi ideology, talk about the Tavistock influence, to talk about things like how we were programmed from World War II and into the 50s and with the Cold War and 60s with Vietnam and the counterculture and all of this. Because in order to understand today, you should have a good understanding, working understanding of what we've had over the last, you know, 6 decades, and that's just me, but it obviously can go back further. But really, the hot stuff is right here in the last, I'll say, in the last 30 years. So that's why it's important. That's why we do go back and we do talk about Tavistock. We do talk about the counterculture. We do talk about the Nazis. We talk about, and even yesterday with Dr. Lake talking about the Nazi, not in this context, but talking about the Nazi activity. Briefly, making reference to that, well, was it Dr. Lake who talked about the Nazi bell, or no? Was that Anthony? That was
no,
Anthony Pash.
Yeah,
but Dr. Lake, I think, referenced the Nazis as well during that marvelous interview, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, this is why all of these things fit together. They all tie together. So
yes, they do.
All right.
And let's do this.
Oh, Joe, let me ask you real quick. I didn't get a chance to ask you this. Did you see the commercial for Mountain Dew?
I don't have cable anymore.
Okay. Well, this was actually a commercial. If you watch some of the YouTube videos, you'll see the advertisements put in there for Mountain Dew. How many people have seen this? It's a baby monkey and
no.
It's a chimera. It's a baby monkey and puppy, I think.
What's baby, the, what's part, the significance?
Well, what is it? Well, thanks,
puppy
Eric.
Is it puppy, like man, monkey, bear, pig?
Well, it's actually kind of a really gross, and I mean gross, image of a puppy, monkey, and baby. The legs of a baby with a diaper, the body of a monkey, body of a monkey, and the head of a what do they call those little dogs with a smush face?
Pug.
Pugs, thank you. Okay. So
only you and my dad, Eric.
Of course. Eric said the cutest dog in the world.
It's funny because my wife doesn't, she thinks those are the ugliest dogs in the world, yet her favorite cats are Persians, which have flat faces just like the pug dogs do. So
I'm telling you, you know, all dogs are good looking, but anyway. So the reason I asked that before the top of the hour was because there are top U.S. intelligence officials today calling gene editing a weapon of mass destruction. And the only reason I brought that up is I know you've got some stuff on the other side, and I want to prepare you for that because
there was
a new
document, and there's some stuff that slipped by us. You know, the Center for Device and Radiological Health released their 2016-2017 strategic priorities.
Yep.
Which you know, I've been doing research on person-centered medicine. Well, the White House, at the end of November 2015, released the Precision Medicine Initiative Privacy and Trust Principles, and this is the Precision Medicine Initiative to accelerate biomedical discoveries and medical devices to work with engaging individuals and patients. We'll be right back, folks, on this Friday edition with your calls and more news.